When you connect with the meaning, with the why behind your work, you go home happier, you do better at your work, you become more collaborative, more creative, and there's numbers, there's percentages here in the research that show this. There's a study from Blue Zones that says purpose-driven people live 7 years longer. And if that's not enough, there's a study I found that said purpose-driven people are more attractive. So there's tons of evidence out there that show the benefits, not just to the individual. You know, I always say being purpose-driven is unequivocally the best thing that is good for, like in my industry, it's good for healthcare, right? It's good for your company, and it's good for all of us because we all are or will be patients or caregivers at some point, right? So it's just good for everyone. The problem is most of us aren't purpose-driven. That's the gap. That's what I'm trying to change, because it's just good for everybody when we do connect with it.
Hello, and welcome to the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast, where you'll hear folks that should be rising to the top of our news feeds and social media, but for some reason, the negative news and social just can't focus on what's right with the world. It is still an amazing world out there, and the people we're talking to and writing about are evidence of that all around us. We can get started with that right now with our guest, Jill Donahue. Jill is a researcher, a teacher, a speaker who is lifting others up through an acclaimed program called The Power of Purpose. And in today's episode, she shares with us through a very unique lens how we can get closer to feeling like we can live with something she calls noble intention in whatever line of work we're in. And as we do so often at the Goodness Exchange and the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast, we're going to open new landscapes in our own lives by breaking down some of the myths in a pretty aligned field. Big Pharma. Now, this interview is not about Big Pharma, but it is about the most amazing people there. And that's why I'm interviewing Jill, because she has written an amazing new free ebook called A Dose of Inspiration, 100 Purpose Stories from Pharma Leaders. Yes, that world, like all others, has its bad actors, but turns out also, like what's common in our media, the really wonderful people leading with heart and great intention, well, their stories are not rising to the top. So Jill Donahue, welcome to the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast.
Thank you, Linda. It's so fun to be chatting with you again. I've been looking forward to it.
Oh, well, the reason why Jill's saying again there is because we have had some rousing pre-calls.
Yes, we have.
Oh my gosh. Jill has so introduced fun. Me to some other great thought leaders that are going to be interviewed on this podcast. And she and I just fell over a cliff together in the discovery again of all that's going on that's right. So I can't wait to get right at this for people so they know that this interview is going to be about them and what's possible if we just get rid of some of our limiting beliefs and move on to this topic of leading with purpose. Because mm-hmm. that's your whole gig, right? Is you have a pharma story, a story of your personal life that brought you here, which I want you to tell in a minute. But you're helping people in pharma lead with purpose and discover these hidden motivations in their why. So talk to us about all this.
Yeah, it was a big aha for me years ago when I was teaching people how to engage, how to communicate better. And I had this moment when I was teaching these students where I thought, oh my gosh, they could use what I'm teaching them for ethical engagement, ethical influence. And I thought to myself, there's something here that I'm not communicating, but I know to be true. And that is when you lead with a noble intention, when you lead with purpose to do good in the world, that's when everything falls into place. So I went back to the literature. Before that, I was working on adult education principles. And I went back to the literature. And right about then, there was this explosion in the literature on being purpose-driven. So, you know, what do I mean by that? It's focusing on how you can serve, how you can make a difference, how you can contribute. That, it turns out, is when we feel our best, when we feel that we're living in purpose. We're living in alignment to our values. And we can find that ability to serve, to contribute, to help people in any role we're working in. And that was the big for me. Yeah.
Do you think that's really, like, have you found that to be true? Oh, I actually, tell us a little bit more about that, because, you know, there's people who work in the pharma world who are not the scientists right on the cutting edge. They're support people or so forth. But you're reminding us that those roles are critical. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I say, you know, I work just in the pharma community, but I say whether you sit at the reception desk at the front door or the CEO desk on the top floor, you are part of the contribution to improving lives. That's what our industry does, right? We help save and improve lives. And whatever you do, you're a part of that. I always think of, you may have heard this story of John F. Kennedy when he visited NASA in the 60s.
No, tell it.
Okay, back then, everyone was focused on getting a man on the moon, right? As the saying goes. And apparently, he approached a janitor and said, "What do you do?" And that janitor stood up tall and proud and said, "Mr. President, I'm helping to put a man on the moon," right? Clearly, he chose, and choice is a big thing here. He chose to be connected to the fact that if he didn't pick up that banana peel, Neil Armstrong might have tripped and not made the trip to the moon. So yeah, whatever your role is, you can choose to make, to connect the dots, you could say.
That's goosebump number one there. I got a little bit of goosebumps when you were telling that JFK story, because I see that in my working life all the time. It's such good people are contributing in so many important ways. This is why I love the leadership angle that you're talking about, because I don't know that leadership in many business settings is making people feel like what they do critical to the, right?
And that's, I think, a big mistake. We're focused on incentives and other ways of trying to motivate people. When we can't motivate others, we can help them create that motivation within. And the best way to do that, and the least expensive way to do that, is help people connect to their why. Why does this work matter to you? Looking at your own life and your own life story. Where does this come from for you? The meaning. Yeah.
Okay, so you have this wonderful little diagram that we can kind of divide our lives into three circles, and there's this sweet spot in the middle.
So if you picture three circles that are overlapping, and then overlapping right in the middle, there's a sweet spot where the three of them overlap. And when we look at our purpose, people often, if I can, you know, read the bubble in their mind, often they think of some version of their family. Right? My purpose is, of course, my three wonderful daughters, my husband, my mother. Everything I do is to serve and support them, right? That we can call our personal purpose. Often it's family, friends, faith fit in there, right? Then there's our organizational purpose. Who you're working for, what is it that they're trying to do? What is the difference they're trying to make in the world, right? And usually that's pretty boldly stated on a website. In pharma, every pharma company has it, right? We're here to save and improve lives somewhere, right? Then the third circle, and this is the one that I think is missing a lot for people, that's your role purpose. And it's an important leg of this three-legged stool that people just aren't focusing on or choosing to work on. That is, how does your role contribute to the organizational purpose? Daniel Pink, who I adore, I just adore him. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him a couple of times, and he's just a great thought leader. I encourage people to look him up, check out his work. In his book, Drive, he summarized 50 years of research on what motivates us at work, with purpose being one of them, autonomy and mastery. But he talked about how often the big P, the organizational purpose, that's there, right? To save and improve lives, that's big, that's out there. But he says the little P, your role purpose, that's a lot quieter. People aren't quite connected to it. They get focused on their to-do list, right? And they lose track of, right, everything I'm doing, what I'm trying to do is to help save and improve lives, right? How do I link that? That's when the magic happens, when you connect all that.
Okay. I just want to tell people, if you see me looking down and taking notes, A, I keep hash marks for how many times I get goosebumps during these interviews. And B, I also keep track of things like you just referenced. So people can just relax through this interview. If you go to the Goodness Exchange and the Conspiracy of Goodness podcast part of the big website there, you can find this episode beautifully and fully written out in a form of an article, and the videos there. And I will make a link. So if people see me jotting down today, I'll make a link to every single book and video and the other things that Jill and I will reference, because we're both, that's one of the things we connected on. Gosh, we couldn't hardly stop talking about our
favorite books. We could talk for hours.
Podcasts, YouTube channels. We're going to try and share as much of that today as we can with people. Okay. So one of the most fascinating parts of your story is how you started. And this is one of the things I love to talk to people about, because People are always asking me, you know, obviously I talk to and write about people who have found their purpose, what they were uniquely built to contribute. No doubt about it. They're in their zone of genius. Okay. But, and most of us want to get there. Well, there are four things I could go on. I do some public speaking, and there are four ways that you find your purpose. And one of them equates to your story. It's very much serendipity and not always good things that start you off on your purpose. So, and then we get there and then we can't resist keeping on going. So talk to us about your story.
Well, yeah. Why am I here? Why do I care? Why do I do this? You know, I go back to when I joined the pharma industry. I came in with a background in psychology, and I looked around me, and everyone around me was really, really strong in the life sciences. And, you know, you can picture that muscle was really toned, but the behavioral science arm was a little weaker. That's the muscle that, you know, the skills of how we communicate and engage the person in front of us so that we can collaborate and work together. That wasn't as good. And I was quite fascinated with this. So I did my master's in adult education with a focus on influencing healthcare behavior change. And I studied and researched this. And then something happened that really emphasized my passion for this, I guess. And that was, you know, watching my father die as a result of a prescribing error. So being in our industry, I kept thinking about the closed door. You know, what if my father's doctors, pharma rep, or medical science liaison, or the person from our industry had been better able to access and engage him to know the right product at the right time for the right patient? Because that's what we are trying to do. So I kept studying this, and I was learning things. I thought, oh gosh, if only my peers could know this, right? And I wanted to sing it from the rooftop. So I wrote a couple of books, created some programs, and then had this idea that, oh, maybe I could help change the industry instead of just, you know, here in Canada, maybe we could do something. So we did that. We started being asked to speak, you know, on stages around the world. We started a nonprofit group called the Aurora Project, which was trying to illuminate our path to something we call in our industry patient centricity. What it really means is a focus on the patient. What a concept, right? Which you do so well in your practice. And you're like, I've been so impressed with what I've learned about you and how, you know, you have a chief happiness officer. And like, you're just the epitome of patient centricity. So I've been talking about this term since, about this concept since before it was a term. And that's what I love to do. And as I told you earlier, it was, you know, when I was teaching people how to move forward, that I had this aha that it all starts with this foundation of being focused on serving, of helping, of making your difference with a noble intention, focusing on your purpose. Mm. So, you know, that brings us to today, really, where my favorite thing to do, like I'll do it on a Friday night, is this power of purpose with people, helping people connect with their why. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't want this point to be missed, is that somehow you had the wherewithal to recognize there was a prescribing error that essentially ended your dad's life. Mm. And instead of that becoming a burden for you, choosing a life of, you know, regret and unhappiness and all kinds of things that would some people would focus their energy on, you said, it seems like you saw it as an opportunity. Like you recognized all the gaps in the system and you said, oh my gosh. You know, it wouldn't take that much for somebody to expose these gaps in a helpful way and develop the kind of systems that this won't happen to anybody else's dad.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's fuel, right? And like you said at the beginning, that can help us. That's one of the many triggers to help us find meaning in our work, right? So life throws all sorts of things at you, and it's what you do with it, what your choice is. Back to that word choice. Right? You know, barring any mental health issues, of course, but that choice we have to be purpose-driven is so worth it. And often those things that happen, are they good? Are they bad? I love that episode that you did. Good thing, bad thing.
Yeah. Dr. Sweekumar Rao, she's on it. Yeah. Dr. Sweekumar Rao has this amazing episode with us. I'll put that in the show notes on the Goodness Exchange as well, about, you know, taking the things that happen to us and just pause. Resisting the urge to call them good or bad. Just be with them in the moment and let some time pass and work with it. And, you know, a lot of times some of the worst things in our life can turn out to be a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that Jill speaks to thousands of people, and she's particularly focused in the pharma industry, but she is helping people recognize what they're uniquely built to contribute, their why, their how, their what. So talk to us a little bit about, oh, of course, we're adding to the show notes here, Simon Sinek, and how you see his message fitting with what you do.
Yeah, if people haven't heard of Simon Sinek, I encourage them to check him out and follow him and his ideas. But he has a really famous TED Talk and book by the same name, Start With Why. And he studied, you know, what do the most influential communicators do differently than all the rest of us? There's a few of them up there that are really good communicators. What do they do differently than everybody else? And he summarized it by saying, well, they start with why, then how, then what. Most of us do the reverse. We start with our title, which is meaningless to people, maybe get to what we do, rarely get to why we do it. But when we flip that around, when we share with someone, you know, doctor, you know, as far as our reps meeting with doctors, doctor, before I get started, I know you may have a stereotype of me, and I just want to share with you why I'm here and what my intentions are. My story goes like this, and share their why first. To let someone see, oh, you do have a noble intention. I can work with you. I can trust you. Trust is a big thing.
Yeah, trust is a big thing.
And it's important for the other person. It's also important for you, you know, that start with why for yourself. When you wake up in the morning and you remember why you're there, just take a minute to go do big picture. Why am I here? Then that guides what you think, say, and do in a beautiful way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some really, I think, landscape expanding ideas that you have that just are going to make a lot of room for all of us to think differently about what we do in our working lives and beyond as well. So we'll take a break and we'll come back more with Jill Donahue. You know how the constant negative noise in our digital lives feels like it's reaching a boiling point? Now, many of us have tuned out the news and social media almost entirely. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. There are newsworthy stories about amazing progress, innovation, leaps in human potential, and wonders in the natural world, and they're just not reaching the top of our feeds. We can have access to this, but none of us has the time or maybe even the emotional stamina to search through all the doom and gloom news to find what's right with the world. Okay, enter the Goodness Exchange. There, we are giving instant access to positive news for curious people. Did you hear about the recent Harvard study that found that exposure to just 4 minutes of good news can make you 32% less anxious and 18% more optimistic? Well, I don't know about you, but I need those kind of numbers in my life. So if you want to live with more joy and way less fear, it's really simple. First, you join us at the Goodness Exchange. Everyone around the world has the opportunity to access this kind of content. And we've promised no politics for about a decade, so you're safe from all that distraction as well. Second, you allow this new, more positive, balanced worldview to put a spring in your step again. It can change the way you react to your kids, your coworkers, everybody you come in contact with. And the stories we write about can make you the idea person in your circles. These challenging times call for us to wake up and take control of our perspective. The people who use the Goodness Exchange have the ability to react to the harshness of the world much different because they know way more about what's right with the world. And that's a resource. So subscribe to the Goodness Exchange, our YouTube channel and the podcast, and use this content to live a more expansive worldview. It is still an amazing world out there, and you can be a part of it. Welcome to the Conspiracy of Goodness. Okay, we're back with Jill Donahue. Jill is a leader, a speaker, an advisor in the world of big pharma, and she is helping to bring to light a lot of the amazing leadership, commitment, and noble intention there that, of course, we're just not hearing enough of because there is this other narrative about big pharma. And one of the stories that she tells is so wonderfully applied to all of our working lives. Can you share the story of Johnny Johnson with us?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. People will say, well, I don't have a purpose. My role, I don't touch the patient in my job or other roles out there. Oh, I don't see the big picture here. And I think about Johnny Johnson, or people will say, well, my leader doesn't, you know, they're not connected to purpose or why. And I'll say, well, I want to share with you a story about Johnny Johnson. So I met Johnny Johnson when I was on the shuttle bus at the airport in Phoenix, and he drove the bus. Right. So he drove the bus in a circle all day long. So you might think, oh, he doesn't have much purpose in his role, and you'd be wrong. So what happened when we got on that bus was his voice boomed over the loudspeaker. Welcome to my bus. It is my privilege and pleasure to serve such an elite group of people. And we all kind of look, right? Like normally subdued passengers kind of, what? What's going on? Smiling. And he said, no, seriously, you guys are the ones who, you know, not only had a dream of a trip, you made it happen. By the end of this short shuttle bus, he had us all smiling. And I got off the bus and I said, Johnny, you know, where does this great energy come from? You know, and he had this beautiful smile. And he said, well, I had a choice. I came to this country with my master's degree from my home country. And I had a choice of what my day was going to look like. I chose to find meaning in my work. My role is to make people smile, right? He found how he could contribute, how he could help others in that role. His job was to make people smile. I said, well, you're sure doing that in spades. And I said, curious, you know, you go home with this great smile on your face. Do you make more money than the other guys too? And he said, well, I make about $100 a day. And I said, well, what do the other guys do? 40. So he more than doubled his tips. And then he added, one day on my birthday, I made 500. I was like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, the mic drop moment, he said, but you know, people are smart. It has to come from here. And he put his hand on his heart. And I was like, okay, there's my whole workshop right there, right? It's about authenticness, being authentically connected to your purpose. So there he is going home with a smile on his face, making more money, feeling good that he's living a job with purpose, and he's driving a shuttle bus, right?
I think
and
we
you've
all can
met
tell
these
stories.
People. Yeah, yes, exactly. Yes.
We right? can all tell stories. I remember a TSA guy that was just like that.
Exactly.
Years ago, one of the last times I ever flew before Thanksgiving from Vermont back to Illinois. That was a nightmare. But there was this guy in the TSA line, one of the TSA guys, who was like a stand-up comedian mixed with your, you know, second grade teacher, mixed with, you know, some endearing, you know, neighbor that was just helpful in every possible way. He was amazing.
A unicorn.
He was a unicorn. Yes. Yeah. I call them the joyful ones. He was definitely the joyful ones. You know, so these are two, the Johnny Johnson story and my TSA agent guy.
Yeah.
You know, they're two great stories about, you know, like we can't blame the fact that we're not working with joy or purpose on the fact that our leaders may not be doing it. I mean, organizations might be not great at walking their talk, right? But there are pockets in all organizations that are just extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, in fact, with the Johnny Johnson, we had a really negative experience with his manager back where we dropped off the rental car. So in spite of his poor leader, he chose to do this himself. And I say that to people, yes, of course, it's ideal when this purpose starts with the leadership and trickles down. But you can choose that in your own life, in your own world, to focus on how you're serving, how you're helping people, how you're making a difference for someone in your role. Mm-hmm. You can choose to do that.
And, you know, another thing that you talk about, which I think is related here, is being able to rise way above and see, you say, take the helicopter view of the golden threads that run through the forest of our lives. Talk about that.
Yeah. So often, you know, one of the things we do is try to help people see their story, why it matters to you to help people. Where does that come from? And we're often so busy in the forest of life, or you can think of yourself on the hamster wheel, right? Going, going, going. You don't have time to step off and look at where have you been and where are you going. And when, you know, in that forest, you can't see the path in front of you. It's just trees and the path behind you is overgrown. But when you do that helicopter view, and we go through this 9-step interview that we do with people to help them identify where was that seed planted that made you someone who wanted to make a difference in the world, that made you someone who chose to listen to this podcast because you are searching for purpose and meaning, right? Where did that come from for you? And the clearer you can see that, and most people, you know, the stats are 90% of people are not connected to their purpose,
right?
Sadly. And most people, when we say, you know, what's your story? They're like, I don't have a story. My job was serendipitous. I did it because, you know, it's good lifestyle, you know? But when we dig deeper and peel back the layers of the onions, oh my gosh, there's so much there, right? In people's lives. That helps them connect with, yes, that's why helping people is meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes, this is so important too. I guess in most of the stories of the thought leaders that I talk to, in most of their bios, most of them, in fact, can trace if most of them know right away. Just yesterday, I was going to see whether, yes, when your episode publishes, two episodes before your episode, I'm interviewing the first Black African, South African premier archaeologist in South Africa. She's an amazing woman who's in charge of the two big digs, one being the Rising Star Cave, where we're finding our human ancestors. We're doing the most extraordinary things 125,000 years ago. And we thought it was 35,000. So we pushed it back 100,000 years. Anyway, she's an amazing woman. And she can remember the day she was sitting watching morning cartoons with her mother. And she just, there was something on the TV about science and archaeology and paleo, you know, dinosaurs and stuff like that. And she just turned to her mom and said, I'm going to be the first Black archaeologist in South Africa one day. She remembers that moment. And, you know, I think it's important that if we're feeling like we're not finding our purpose or meaning right now, do you think that a little bit of soul searching back to what we really loved as a child is important?
Oh, so much, so much. And maybe not even what you loved as a child, just some of your experiences. You know, I think about if someone had asked me early on in my career, you know, why are you here? Why did you come to pharma? Why are you? And I started as a sales rep. Why are you a sales rep? Well, of course, immediately I would have said, well, my friend's a rep, and if she can do it, I can do it. And, you know, you get a free car and they're going to put phones in cars. I'm going to be the coolest girl giving away my age here, right? But yeah, that's going to be super cool, right? You know, a lot of time people will say, well, the remuneration, you know, that's why I'm here. Yeah, that's an outcome, right? But why can you find meaning in this work? So if someone had gone through, you know, this exercise with me and peeled back the onion, I would have realized, right, okay, my parents were both teachers. Education was super important to me. Not only were they teachers, they were really good teachers. They taught me about loving people and serving and helping others, right? And then thirdly, Dad had had a heart attack when I was in grade 9. So healthcare was really of interest to me, right? So that's what I brought to my role as a pharma rep. I saw my job as educating to help people. And that's why I did so well, not, you know, promoting or any of that. It was about educating to help doctors help patients. And that's why I did so well. And then you see how my purpose evolved as it does when I was 35 and Dad died, and it evolved, it got deeper. But that just that experience of how I was raised was part of the values, right? The values that led to me finding meaning. How can in this job I find a way to help, to serve, to make a difference for people?
This is lovely. How can people connect more with this message you're putting out there?
Yeah, I think
The book.
Yeah, there's the book. Absolutely. Go to the link that we'll put there. It's accelerate.ca/freebook, accelerate with an EX, and download that. But there's so many more books out there too on purpose. Okay. I think the main thing is that,
tell me some of your favorites.
And you know what, Linda, too? I've summarized a lot of my favorites, so I can send you a link to those summaries.
Okay, good.
Like my top three ideas from them, the purpose economy, the purpose effect, culture code. Perfect. There's so many. I'll send you links to the summaries of them. And if we can just stimulate people to want to learn about it in this call, to say, oh my gosh, that is key to my happiness and living a full life, is finding purpose and meaning in work. It's there for you to create. And if people are stimulated to want to investigate that, there is so much literature out there that we can share just a few of them.
All right. You know, I have a feeling, though, people are going to go to the internet and say, you know, whatever you might Google, and it's going to feel like I had a a really good guest that's talking about spirituality, and not that it, not in a religious sense, but just how do we find that deeper meaning in our lives? Yeah. And he says, you know, if you went to the internet and Googled spirituality, it's going to feel like the junk food aisle of the spiritual supermarket. I think finding your purpose, you'd wind up somewhere in that kind of mashup too. So what I'm going to do is make sure that this list she refers to is on the Goodness Exchange website in the article for this podcast. All right. Yeah. You've got some great stories that you like to tell. Talk to us about triumphs of purpose. There's the Tylenol story.
Oh,
and the Johnson and Johnson credo. That's such a beautiful story.
Yeah. And I don't know if listeners remember what age they're at or know the history of this, but there was a day many years ago where Tylenol capsules actually were killing people. So there was someone who had laced them with cyanide, and there were a number of people, a handful of people that died as a result of taking a simple Tylenol pill. This was pre-internet. And so there were, you know, people out with bullhorns announcing, you know, throw out your Tylenol. Boy Scouts went door to door, et cetera. The famous marketers in the world said, Tylenol is done. Right? They're never going to survive.
Just to clarify, this wasn't the public outcry for everybody to turn their back on their Tylenol. It was Tylenol themselves chose to tell everybody to dump every bit of Tylenol they could.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, you would think that with this risk of Tylenol and this news, the whole world knew, well, I shouldn't say the whole world, this was in the US, but everybody knew Tylenol could kill you. Right. Yet, I bet you have Tylenol in your kitchen, in your medicine cabinet.
Oh, yes.
For sure. I know I do. Of course. Yeah, we all do. Right. Why? Yeah. Because Johnson & Johnson had just had a retreat years before that, they had set out their credo, right? Okay. That said, everything we do is to help mothers and fathers and children and people. Their mission, they had set out their purpose, their why. And they had just done a retreat to say, is that still who we are? Yes, it is. So when this tragedy struck, they knew exactly what they needed to do. They needed to immediately discontinue. They needed to have everyone throw out everything. Huge. Can you imagine the loss? Right?
But they owned
Seven people were dead, but they owned it. They owned it. They worked closely with all the investigators. And that's why trust remains. And that led to, remember we're talking about good thing, bad thing? Well, the good thing that came out of that was that's what led to safety seals.
Oh, right.
We all have safety seals now, right? That's it changed all the packaging. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. For as hard, as much as aggravation, and we complain under our breath about trying to get into that bottle for the first time. It's all there, good thing, bad thing, because of that chapter in history.
Right. Yeah.
And we're all
trust
safer
is
for
a
it.
Huge, huge factor. And when we lead with our noble intention. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's a big topic in our industry, right? Because you alluded to it at the beginning that, you know, our ranking in public trust is pretty low. There's some studies that say we're trusted as much as tobacco companies. And that.
Oh, no, Big Pharma is what you're referring to, right?
Big Pharma. Yeah. And that infuriates me. You know, they take lives, we save lives. I just can't stand that. And what I know of pharma is amazing, wonderful, heartful, purpose-driven people who are taking their special skill in the world, often it's a science skill, and helping, changing lives, right? Saving lives. I know I'm alive today because of pharma. My husband, you know, so many people in my world are alive today because of medicines and medical advancements. But that trust is so low. And I think one of the reasons is that people think we have our best intention in mind instead of theirs. And that's what I say to people. You know, people are engaged most by those they trust, admire, and believe care for them.
And, you know, that kind of ties into something that I do a lot of public speaking about, which is this thing I'm calling the gratitude economy. I think we are all looking for trusted advisors in our lives.
Yes.
Whether it's our hairdresser or our pharma company or our, you know, whatever, our dentist, we are looking for people that we can just leave it to them. Yeah. You know, I trust them. It's going to be fine. And just, we get that part of our life squared away because there's so much unpredictability out there.
That's right. Yeah.
And trust is so easily lost and hard won.
So true. Right.
And in this gratitude economy that I keep saying is coming right now, what just a little context is that I think what we've been in since the advent of the newspaper and radio is what's like I would call the attention economy. People made business advancements and notoriety advancements just by interrupting louder and louder and louder and trying to get our attention. But now I think we're starting to turn our backs on all that. And we're looking for people who can be the trusted advisors. Yes. And I love that when I see companies doing things that seem kind of counterintuitive when it comes to gaining our trust. What Tylenol did was magnificent. But they had to have thought about it first, right? Like that wasn't just the way they'd react. They had had a thoughtful process. They had gone through a thoughtful process to say, we have a credo and we're going to stick to it.
That's right.
Thick or thin.
Exactly. Well, similar to in Dr. Albert Bourla, who's the CEO of Pfizer, in his book, Moonshot, where he described the journey, that race to getting the vaccine out. He said the biggest factor wasn't the science, wasn't the technology. The biggest factor was the cultivation of a purpose-driven culture. Pre-pandemic, that's what made the scientists stay up 24/7, right? Until this was done, work around the clock, think creatively, collaborate well. That trust is what emerged from that purpose-driven culture. Mm-hmm. Right?
I've got that book somewhere in these piles right here behind
me. Oh, it's a really good one.
Yes, it's a good book. I would totally recommend it to people. Because if you can read through it and keep the bigger picture in mind or what's happening in your life in mind, you can think through things you're going through with your family a little bit differently. Because that's what they did.
Yeah.
They kept their eye on the big picture. They began with the end in mind.
I'm making a difference. Yeah, I'm serving, of helping. You know, you're talking about back to the trust thing. I have a client where we do this power of purpose with everyone in the organization, and they have such outcomes of that trust. For example, our client told me the other day that the patient advocacy group said to him, you know, we work with 17 companies in this space. None of them do we trust as much as you. And that's why we're working with you, right?
Oh, nice.
When you lead with purpose, that noble intention, people see you, they trust you, they want to collaborate with you. And that's when we can all do our best work. Just lead with purpose. Yeah.
No matter your role.
Right. Exactly.
No matter your role in whatever you're doing.
Focus on serving, on helping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. So, you know, you talk about the stages. Can an individual apply you've got four stages of a tree that's pretty neat. I'll put that diagram on the article too, but talk us through that if you can, and we'll make sure that the image is on the article.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So when you look at a growth of a tree and you start with a seed and then it grows to a sapling, a bigger tree, and then finally a fruit bearing tree, what is the order? And so I have this slide where there's four words, you know, I've talked about being patient focused, right? Being focused on your why, your purpose. I've talked about trust. I've talked about profitability because that's a key factor too, and engagement. What's the order of that? And I'll say to people, what's the seed of that growth? And they'll say, well, trust. Yes. Yes, of course. Except we dropped that seed, right? We don't have trust. And often in our world, you don't have trust going in, right?
Yeah.
So what's the seed that you can plant? Well, that's your purpose, your focus on serving. For us in pharma, it's that patient focus. You lead with that. That grows into the sapling of trust. Trust then allows you to engage, to collaborate. And that engagement then allows you to create profitability. That's the fruit-bearing tree. The fruit falls, creates more seeds that allow us to continue to focus, to better help those patients, and to continue to find new cures and treatments in our case, right? Gosh, we've got a lot of, I really hope somebody's working really hard on Alzheimer's right now, for example, right?
Yeah, gosh, we could.
And that's our sustainable cycle, right? Profitability is key in there to continue that cycle.
You know, you might think that dentists, you know, if you think of your dentist as a Porsche driving, on his third marriage, golfing guy.
Right.
You might, and it's a stereotype of dentists, just like in Big Pharma, we all have these stereotypes. You might think that a dentist would put profit first. And then the whole thing would go the opposite direction. But you make such a good point that, you know, if we work with and teach our people to work beside us with this in the right order, the profit takes care of itself.
Exactly. Sort of like the watch pot never boils. Where are you putting your focus? If you're focusing on market share, on profitability, you're not going to get there as fast as if you're focusing on serving, on helping, on your purpose. And then, oops, look what happened when you weren't even looking. The profit yes. followed. And there's many studies, you know, people say, oh yeah, it's nice for you to say that, but this is based in evidence. I work in a very evidence-based industry. So there's evidence behind all this incredible research that has been done that proves purpose-driven organizations outperform all the others. That seems so obvious then to do it, but it does take work. It does take effort. That's the thing, right? To be purpose-driven takes effort. It doesn't just, you can't just say, you know, be purpose-driven. You have to help people connect
with
that.
It takes effort. And what if we called it, it takes an investment, and that's an investment of time and energy and focus. You know, one of the things that when we realized how important the right order of the things you just mentioned were at our dental practice, we have 14 employees. And so it's really important to get everybody on the same page. And we created a position in our office called the Chief Happiness Officer.
I love
that. So we actually have a CHO. And in our dental practice, we had the same mission statement for 30 years. First, patients keep their teeth their whole life. Second, we do it in a happy work environment. And third, we make enough money to do it again next year. Yeah. That's actually
there
the
you
word.
Go.
Okay.
That's the tree. That's the same thing.
That's the tree. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So what I have to tell you is, unfortunately, my husband and I focus almost solely on the top one. Patients keep their teeth their whole life. We hired the best people. We used the best materials. We learned computer dentistry in 2003. It was just all about that top one.
Yeah.
Well, and the second one, do it in a happy work environment. We just didn't. We just thought it would, that people would just join us and they'd be happy to be working for purpose, with purpose. But we didn't invest
in
a happy work environment. So when we created this whole position, that's nothing else. It's not like our office manager and the chief happiness officer, or a dental assistant and the chief officer. We have someone who's actually, their whole job is to create a happy work environment for patients and team. And I bring that up in that, you know, that was a financial commitment. It was an organizational commitment, because nobody even knew what the heck I was talking about when I ran in and said, we're going to have a chief happiness officer.
But it was brilliant.
It took a year for it to sort of pan out and be understandable. But now I know they would never in a trillion years let Erin get away. This is a wonderful woman that we found with had just the right personality style for that. But I mentioned it in that, that in our organizations, we can be the chief happiness officer, whether we got bonked on the head and told we needed to or not. I mean, it's something we can, you know, happiness is something you choose ahead of time. Do you agree with that?
Oh, totally agree with that. Absolutely. And I think you should do a whole episode on your chief happiness officer and how you did it and all the pros. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that would love to know more about that. And managers of teams, they can be, you know, they can think of themselves as the chief happiness officer, because the results from that are so tangible. Yeah, so important. Yeah. That choice, you know, it's the same, you know, I think maybe you're the same as me, but there was a time when I used to think, you know, happiness, well, that's over there. Right after the kids are out of diapers. Okay. After the kids are out of this stage. Okay. Then when I finish my degree. Okay. And then at some point you get hit on the head and you realize, wait a minute, happiness has got to be right here, right now. I've got to make this choice to work on this. And yes, it takes more muscles to smile than to frown. It takes more work, but man, is it worth it. And that all connects with the whole purpose thing, right? Taking that effort.
You know, you've got an amazing topic that you talk about, which I think I want to be sure and share before we wrap this interview up. You talk about how purpose-drivenness, once you get there, it opens a whole new world of curiosity, creativity, and collaboration.
Yeah. So whether you call it side effects of becoming purpose-driven or primary endpoints, it's all good news. So when you connect with the meaning, with the why behind your work, you go home happier. You do better at your work. You become more collaborative, more creative. And there's numbers, there's percentages here in the research that show this. Less sick, live longer. There's a study from Blue Zones that says purpose-driven people live 7 years longer, right? And if that's not enough, there's a study I found that said purpose-driven people are more attractive. So there's tons of evidence out there that show the benefits, not just to the individual. You know, I always say, being purpose-driven is unequivocally the best thing that is good for, like in my industry, it's good for healthcare, right? It's good for you, the pharma employee or whatever employer you are. It's good for your company, and it's good for all of us because we all are or will be patients or caregivers at some point, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just good for everyone. The problem is most of us aren't purpose-driven. That's the gap. That's what I'm trying to change because it's just good for everybody when we are, when we do connect with it.
So what do you think, you know, as we wrap up here, I always like to finish up with, you know, some simple thought. There's a great Blaise Pascal quote that says, always walk with something beautiful in your mind so that you can reference it in the darker times. You know, that's a paraphrase. He says it much more beautifully than that. But in any case, we all need to carry something with us to have, to grab onto. So, you know, you're talking about a lot of really important concepts that open up possibilities for us all. If you, you know, tuned into the news or caught social media and then you're just like, what do you really wish people knew?
I think back to the final days with my dad. And I had the privilege of being in the ICU with him on those final days, and we had some amazing conversations, and you know, we watched the hockey game too. But you know, in those amazing conversations, it came down to with him trying to pass on to me his lessons in his life, and he was just such a wonderful man. And it came down to this, Linda: it's all about people. It's all about loving people. Just love people. And I think that is foundational. And I don't mean romantic love, of course. I mean just compassion and love for people. And that is what will fuel your purpose. Because when you love and care about people, that will lead you to want to help them. And purpose comes from helping people. Right. So lead with that. That fosters that spirit of service and this desire to help others. And then purpose brings meaning. And then that leads to some of the other things you said, you know, that leads to us, to our desire to be curious. I think curiosity is so important. I wish everyone understood the values of curiosity. And that leads us to do other important things like taking the high road, right? Mm-hmm. Choosing the difficult yes versus the easy no. Being kind, right? It fits in here as one of the most important things, I think, to do. And that leads you to, you know, assume best intent. Keeps your blood pressure down. You know, all these things start with love. Choosing an abundance mentality versus a scarcity mentality comes out of that as well. And then sharing your abundance comes out of that as well, which I think forgiveness, forgiving generously comes out of that love as well. As well as caring for yourself, you know, being really conscious of what you feed, not just your mouth, but your mind, your body, and your soul. What are you feeding that? You know, when we start with a place of love for others and ourselves, that grows into connecting with meaning and purpose and all those other things that I think are so important to help our world go round. So I guess that was more than one thing.
We've got to get people acting around their best impulses, which is everything you just mentioned, right? Yeah. And away from our worst impulses.
Yes.
And that's not that hard. Well, I guess what you and I are saying, my own journey has a story of purpose, which we'll share sometime, how I first got into this good news thing 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But almost everybody who is doing something they're just throwing themselves at gladly every day, they have found something that they're uniquely built to contribute through the kind of introspection that you're talking about.
Yes.
And so I want people to go directly to the Good News Exchange, look at find this article in the podcast and look at Jill's list, because that could be what's next. You could find your next steps there.
Keep exploring.
Thank you so much. And you know, if you're interested in the pharma industry or you just really want to hear some good stories that'll reshape your worldview. Mm-hmm. This is another thing I'm talking about a lot these days, Jill, is that we've got to care about our worldview as much as we do our abs.
I know, right?
We're spending so much time worrying about our abs or whatever. And not our worldview. And our worldview is where we lead from every day with our kids or our colleagues at work or the guy who cuts us off in traffic. So Jill's book, I can highly recommend will expand your worldview. Even if you don't give a hoot about Big Pharma, what you're going to find there. I interviewed somebody, one of the people she's written about. I've already talked to him just yesterday. Yeah. And I'm telling you, oh my gosh. Ooh, I just got right? chills again. This free ebook that she is offering to the world, A Dose of Inspiration, 100 Purpose Stories from Pharma Leaders. You are going to have a spring in your step just to know and start questioning the narrative that the media is telling mm-hmm. us, just to know that the truth is always way beyond the limiting beliefs that the media usually leaves with us. And mm-hmm. we need to know about people that are inspirational in all industries. So thank you so much for doing that work, Jill.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure. Yeah. And for showcasing it. Thank you for chatting. Really lovely.
Well,
thank you for your work. Oh my gosh. I am telling the whole world about what you're doing, Linda. It's just incredible. And you're in my ears on every dog walk now, listening to Conspiracy of Goodness, just loving meeting all those people. The world is a better place because of you. I just have to say that. Yeah. You are changing.
That is so kind of you.
So thank you.
Well, it is somebody different from an entirely different genre every week. And now that I've done 170 of these interviews, I live right by what I say. It is still an amazing world. There is an enormous wave of goodness and progress out there. We just aren't hearing about it. And engaging with people like you and your book will remind us of that. And we can walk with a spring in our step again. So thank you, Jill Donahue. In the meanwhile, check out the Goodness Exchange at least 4 minutes a day. There's some Harvard science that says if you just spend 4 minutes a day engaging with good news, you're going to be 32% more grateful, 18% less overwhelmed. And those kind of numbers we can all use in our life. So I hope you take away the joyful and enlightening things that we said, and you have a great week. Thank you so, so much.